It's 4:30 and time for Valley Voices. And if that song doesn't sound familiar, it's only because it's not to this show. But longtime KDNK listeners might remember it because Mr. Lee is sitting right here. Hi, Mr. Lee.
Hi, Amy. Good
How
to see
are you?
You?
Good to see you. None other than Lee Switler, Manny of the Manny and Maria, but Maria's not here show of the Manny in the Morning show, and founder of KDNK. Welcome back.
Thanks, and thanks for having me.
Yeah. What brings you to the Valley this time?
I needed a Carbondale fix.
Okay, yeah.
I just needed it.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, a lot of people need that at times. And so he's dropped into the station, and there's just so many questions I want to ask you. But, you know, the answers to some of which I know. But, you know, I think, first of all, thank you for founding or co-founding KDNK. I came on the air right after you.
You were number two.
Yeah, when the station first went on the air in the Dinkle Building, I can still see it in my memory. I can still see what we were doing there. And I guess I'm wondering if you could talk about that day.
Oh, my gosh. That was just so exciting. Excuse me. Yeah, we had a great party at the Dinkle Building. Everybody was surrounding our board. And, of course, nobody knew how far the signal would go until we actually went on the air. I remember a week before we put out a test tone, and I drove up and down the valley, and you could hear the tone in Aspen, and you can hear the tone in Glenwood. But when we actually went on the air, that didn't happen at all.
It didn't happen?
No.
Oh.
But I do remember as soon as we went on the air, the Bank of Basalt called us. They can hear us in Basalt.
Yay!
And that was really exciting.
Yeah. And now we're heard around the world.
I know we're heard right now in Costa Rica. I know is tuned in. I know Hawaii is tuned in. And I know my family is tuned in. And I'm very excited to be here. It's been a long time.
Yeah. I'm wondering what you think. I mean, thinking back to the Lee Switler who was sitting at the board in the Dinkle Building 34 years ago, 34 and a half years ago, whatever. And the Lee Switler who's sitting here now, knowing that we are streaming live worldwide. What do you think of that, having founded this station in the little Dinkle Building?
It's overwhelming for me because that was never the vision of the station. I will say the vision of the station remains true. What the station is here in the Valley. Okay. The fact that it makes its way around the world is something different. But with all the changes, paid staff, it's still the same great community station. Mm-hmm. It's just, it makes me cry. I can't help it. It does.
It's so great to have you here, though. I mean,
it's emotional to me. It really is.
Yeah, you know? That vision is really strong for you. Talk mm-hmm. about where it came from.
You know, it came from a high school friend of mine who put on KOTO in Telluride, KOTO.
Keep our transmitter on.
And my friend Jerry Green, I was down visiting, and I saw the setup they had. And I remember when I lived in New Jersey, there was a little community station. It was called WFMU, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was up from one of the local colleges. Mm-hmm. And I remember that they were having a fundraising drive. And the whole concept, fundraising, community, no commercials. I remember them, they were going to play Kate Smith, God Bless America, for the next 2 hours until they got enough money. And that just sounded like a really cool thing to do. And then I was down.
What, to play Kate Smith for 2 hours?
To hold the audience hostage for money. So Jerry had a really neat station down in KOTO, and I thought that would be, Carbondale was it. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Green had a big part because he came, in order to get your FCC license, you had to do engineering studies, and we didn't have the money for engineering studies. Jerry was I think he went to, he was a very, very bright guy. Mm-hmm. And he taught us how to plot tangents to show how the signal would progress on different maps that up having. Yeah, and we did that on my lock shop floor in the back room, all of us just laying on the floor mm-hmm. with rulers and dots and mm-hmm. plotting it. So
this would determine, you could see how the signal would go in the
mountains.
Right,
you had to show that you aren't going to overlap somebody else.
Okay.
We were an unserved area, mm-hmm. and so because of that, the government said we were entitled to a public radio station.
Wow.
And we applied for a National Telecommunications and Information Act, NTIA grant. Mm-hmm. In order to get that grant, you had to raise 30% of the funds that you were asking for. And we came up with the idea of, instead of asking for money, because people didn't really want to give us money to an unknown entity, group of kids who just had an idea. Mm. So we asked everybody to pledge. If we get on the air, you'll give us $100.
Okay.
And people had no problem doing that.
Uh-huh. Were they surprised at the end when her KDNK was on the air and they had to give $100?
No, I don't think so. I think they were really happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the culture like in Carbondale at that time?
So Carbondale then, I think you'd have to just say it was ranchers and hippies. And so the hippies came up with the idea of a radio station, mm-hmm. and the ranchers didn't really get it. And I know that because if you look at the original list of people, you know, we have a plaque that were the original donors. It was the same progressive group of people that we all know that are still in town today.
Who's on that plaque? I should have grabbed that plaque before I came in, but I didn't.
Too many people for me to remember.
Okay.
But still, and so I like to point out the fact that it wasn't the reason that I put the station on the air, or not me, that we came up with the idea, but one of the things I always wanted to do was be a sportscaster.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I
made his own dream come true.
There you go. We wanted to do the Roaring Fork Rams, a local football team. And underwriting for the football games was one way for us to make money. And that was one of the biggest money makers at the time because the station had no proven record. Mm-hmm. We were only broadcasting from the top of the Dinkle Building at the time. It was a very local broadcast.
Yeah, getting the signal to Basalt was a feat.
It was mm-hmm. a feat at that time. And so when we could broadcast football games where the ranchers' kids were playing football, and they didn't have to drive to Steamboat Springs to hear their kids, mm-hmm. and their kids' names were on the radio, they got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's how the radio station brought, you know, people together. Mm-hmm. Of course, now everybody loves the station in town.
Right.
Everybody's
a
part of it.
But still, I mean, I think that's really important, you know. I mean, because it wasn't fancy broadcasting. How did you guys broadcast away games?
Originally, we passed a telephone. We had no broadcast equipment, and we would order up a telephone jack for each game, and they mm-hmm. would have it ready for us. It was labeled. We'd walk into the broadcast booth and plug in a telephone, and we'd hand it back and forth. One guy was a play-by-play, the other guy was the color man.
Uh-huh, right.
At the beginning, I was the color man. Eventually, I graduated to play-by-play.
Uh-huh. And you were in heaven, right?
I was in heaven, right.
Pass the phone back and
forth.
Pass
the phone back. And then we made an application to the Aspen Foundation, and they donated money, and we got the full real setup.
So it was the real setup, the Marty. Right?
No, the Marty was actually, Marty is the remote broadcast,
right.
And that is just for kind of locally broadcasting. It has a finite distance. And so, again, Jerry Green, the guy mm-hmm. who did Koto, he told me at the beginning, it's really important to get out in the community, make sure you can do remote broadcasts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so in our original list of equipment, the Marty was there. We wanted a Marty.
Okay. Well, so when you were broadcasting football, what was the rig that you used finally?
Eventually, it was a whatever the quote unquote professionals use. We had a board, headset, microphones.
Okay.
We had a wireless connection if we wanted to send if we had a third guy, sometimes we had a guy down at the field where mm-hmm. we'd go to mm-hmm. make it a little more fun.
Wow.
But it was always fun for mm-hmm. us. It yeah. was never really serious. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was serious that we broadcast the game. But we'd start off our broadcast with Be True to Your School by the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes there'd be a penalty. We had a little recording, Backfield in Motion. Okay, we'd play that.
Backfield
there you go.
In Motion.
And so it was always fun. Mm-hmm. It had to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful. I remember, you know, I think your football broadcasts are what made me decide to like high school football. I've never liked football. I'm sorry. I'm apologizing to everybody out there who are big Broncos fans or whatever, but I really like the sound of high school football. You know, even if I'm not at the game or something, you know, I turn it on in the car, I turn it on at home. There's just something really comforting about the sound of a high school football game on the radio. I have no idea why, but it's probably because of those early broadcasts. So football was the big draw for members. Did we have members at the beginning, or was
yeah.
it just contributions?
Yeah, we had members.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then we moved to, I had other shows too. I started out with a morning show. That was Manny in the Morning. Mm-hmm. And Manny is...
Who's Manny?
Okay, Manny came about, when I first moved to Carbondale, I was involved in this slow pitch softball mm-hmm. league. And Pat Knoll, who had the local newspaper, approached me if I'd like to write a column. And I had to come up with a name. And... I went up to this is crazy, but a buddy of mine who was in town, who was a baseball nut, we went up to the Aspen Public Library, and we were looking for names that we thought would be a sports-type name. We mm-hmm. came up with Manny.
Okay.
So I became Manny Goldberg, and it was Manny's Mound, and every week I wrote at the local column, and that stayed with me. So then Manny in the Morning became a drive show.
But what did you talk about, Manny in the Morning? I mean, you're really good at talking on the radio. Just, you know, you're a sports announcer. That's hard to do. We have Mike Lemmer is our announcer when we do football, and he's really good at it. But you have to be able to just talk and talk and talk. And that's, to me, that's a skill on the radio, to be able to follow what's going on and describe it accurately. It's like translating a language just as you hear it, you know?
Well,
does that make any sense?
Yeah, I understand what you yeah. say. You don't want dead air.
Yeah, exactly.
My Manny in the Morning show was mostly music. It was drive time music.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I had this idea we could beef it up, and I went over and found Mike Spear, another local, and mm-hmm. we became Mike and Manny in the Morning.
Right.
And then we took the show on the road.
Talk about those okay. days. There were some fun times that.
Yes, we would travel to truck stops. We'd travel to local bars, and it would be the morning show. We'd have it up. People, they'd come over to us. We'd be eating breakfast, and we'd have people on the air. We did the first broadcast from, originally, they were the bridge over the Colorado River. No, is that
the pedestrian bridge,
mm-hmm. right? And so Mike and I did the first broadcast from the pedestrian bridge. We thought that was really cool.
Yes, we were on the air the other day, Raleigh and I were on the air on the 14th because of the closure of the old bridge.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And we set up at the Lariat Bar, which is a very old historic bar in
It's not
Denver
there
Springs.
Anymore.
No.
No, it hasn't been there for a long time. That was the heavy-duty drinkers bar.
Mm-hmm.
It was the local bar. It wasn't like the Springs or Docks. It was the local
Serious
bar.
Stuff.
Yeah, open at 7 in the morning or
right.
whatever. Yeah, 8 o'clock. So you set up at the Lariat,
so
the rope.
So we set up at the rope, and during our broadcast, these two older guys came in,
mm-hmm.
and they presented us with, I still have this, belt buckles. They both lived at senior housing.
Yeah.
They had took scraps of copper piping and hammered out belt buckles that said KDNK on them.
Oh, my.
It really was overwhelming. I still
yeah.
have the belt buckle. Yeah.
They just came up. How many times did you set up in the Lariat?
Once. That one time. Just because we wanted to be close to the pedestrian bridge and have the Marty be able to reach. That was the main reason.
Wow. So how did you interview any of the locals in the bar?
Sure. Anybody who was willing to come up to the microphone, mm-hmm. we'd put them on the air. And then we hit, there was a bus truck stop out on I-70.
Yes, the M&M.
M&M.
Oh, my gosh, the M&M. Boy, memory lane here.
Is that still there?
There's a truck stop there, but it isn't the M&M anymore. It hasn't been the M&M. That's the kind of truck stop you go in there, it'd be a hair mm-hmm. in your eggs in the morning.
And Mike and I did a New Year's broadcast from the Glenwood Springs Hot Springs Pool.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that one.
Yeah.
I remember the M&M and I remember the Hot Springs Pool. How did you manage that with the in the pool?
We had a Marty, so it was wireless.
Okay.
And we were in the real hot section.
Right.
And people were kind of sitting around the edges, and the management put the show on over the loudspeaker so the whole pool could hear. Yeah, it was fun. That's what community radio should be.
Yeah,
it should
exactly.
be fun.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, really fun. KDNK, I think, is really fun. You know, I want to mention some of the other people you talked about. Pat Knoll. There was Wick. There was Virginia Squire, who was she was an early station manager. I remember her very well, and Jerry Duckowitz. Talk about Jerry Duckowitz. He was involved in this.
He was a station manager for a while, but I don't think he lasted that long. He was a broadcast partner on football for a while. He was Dandy Duck. That was his
name. That's
right. Right.
That's Jerry Duckowitz, yeah.
There you go.
Got it.
The station managers I remember were Wick and Pat, mm-hmm. who started it. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Jerry took over for a short stint. And then Virginia, she brought us to the next level.
What she did a lot for us. I mean, was she the NPR connection, or did that come later? I should know, but I don't.
She could have been. And one reason Virginia was so good was because her brother lived in Telluride, and I think she came up from Telluride, so she got community radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's why we hired her.
Yeah, she was great. I remember. I still have these memories, you know, of the Dinkle Building and the wooden floors up there, mm-hmm. and talking to Virginia, I can still see it, you know, and then the window behind the board.
I remember going, Wally DeBeck, who owned the Dinkle Building, mm-hmm. he gave us that spot basically to use because we couldn't afford rent at the time. And it was kind of a back space. It wasn't towards the front of the building.
Right.
So, you know, from all parts of the community, they were all helping us get on the air.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a very big space either. There were like three rooms.
Right. And then as far as the carpentry, I remember John Palmer and Kurt Herb Weisbard.
Mm-hmm.
They came in and built our original, all the shelves mm-hmm. and just everything. That was all part of just the community giving.
Yeah.
It was great.
And the community still gives. I mean, you know, the shelves and the music library and everything here is absolutely amazing, but it must be kind of strange to you to come back and see we're inhabiting an entire building.
You own the building, right?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That is kind of a big step up.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's
really
a big responsibility, but you know, we're a community hub. Uh-oh, somebody's calling, and I am going to put them on the air. You ready?
Okay.
KDNK, you're on the air. Hello?
I'm on the air, really?
You're on the air. Who is this? Do you want to be on the air?
I'm listening to Lee Swidler.
Yeah, you are. Who's this?
Oh, my name is Alan Shader. I grew up with Lee.
Shades. Hiya, Shades.
Is this pre-recorded?
No, you are live right now on the air. So if you have nothing to say.
Wait a minute. Hang on one sec.
What did he hang up?
I don't know. People are calling.
Turn your radio down.
Wow.
Let me turn this down.
I don't think you guys are getting it. We're live.
We're live on the air right now.
So my question is, Lee.
Yes.
How did you end up in Carbondale?
Good question.
That is a good question. So
I mean, I know you left Jersey, and then you went to school in Tucson. And how'd you end up?
They ran him out of Tucson. And he had a buddy who was heading up towards Aspen, and he bummed a ride. And he had, at that time, what year was that old van?
Who is this?
Another high school buddy. Oh. These are high school friends who are up.
The Federales make you listen.
All right, we'll stay on the air and we'll respond to you guys.
Thanks for calling.
So, yeah, I was in Tucson, and a friend of mine had moved up here. Mm-hmm. I'll try to be tactful.
Uh-oh.
And he set up a little cabinet shop in Elgebel. Mm-hmm. And he said, you really have to come up and visit and see what this is all about. And I came up to visit, and I said, you know, and I had been a locksmith in Tucson. Mm-hmm. I had learned the trade down there. And I said, this is it for me. I could be the little hippie locksmith in the mountains, have a little cabin. I had a 1946 Chevy Suburban.
Oh, wow.
And we loaded it up from Tucson, drove up. I had rented a cabin on the frying pan. Mm-hmm. It used to be Shenandoah. Mm-hmm. No running water. Mm-hmm. But everybody knew my 1946 Chevy. Mm-hmm. And that was my advertising to drum up the business.
Right. And then you gave birth to a radio station.
And the radio station.
And here you are.
And here I am.
34 years.
34 years. That is something.
That is, really.
It is.
35 in April. Be 35 in April.
Mm-hmm.
Who'da thunk?
Who woulda? Not me.
Yeah.
I hoped. I never thought of the future. I just thought, let's just do this. Mm-hmm. See where it happens.
And you were saying that you think it still holds true to the original
vision.
Can you talk about that?
Well, it should be an eclectic station. Mm-hmm. When you get behind the microphone, you should be able to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. It's up to the program manager to figure out where on the schedule you should be,
right?
But it's your show.
Right.
And that's what this station is. Because there are many shows that people turn off. That isn't their bag. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Right. Everybody has their own thing. There's a time and place. Mm-hmm. And that is the vision of the station, and it does hold true.
It does hold true. It's held true for 34 years. I just think back, and I mean, you're exactly right. I don't always listen to KDNK. Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
But there is some music that just isn't my bag.
Right, you right. Know?
And I think, I mean, that's sometimes I feel guilty about it. It's like, oh, gosh, you know, I really need to be listening to KDNK all the time. But I don't, because that's community radio.
I want to say something else more important. What I think is important right now is that the next generation stays attached to this station, because the 30s and 40-year-old kids, the people that we need to focus on the station, there are podcasts now. There are every kind of other way to distract you from community radio, and the community radio is so important to this valley.
Why? I mean, you know, we had this bricks and mortar building. We're live on the air. People would say maybe we're old fashioned. I don't think radio is old fashioned, but why is it important? Why is it more important than a podcast?
It's the glue that holds the community together. It's down in Costa Rica. I'm involved with some people. I'm trying to do the same thing.
Okay.
So we're having a problem getting a frequency, and some of the people I'm working with are younger kids, and they keep telling me that no, radio is going to go the way of the dial telephone, that we want to put a station on just on the internet, and we'll have Wi-Fi all over town. And I said, well, what about people in cars? Or nope.
Wow, so you're having an argument with these people, debate, discussion. They're saying no, you're saying yes.
Yeah, I'm an old man, I'm not focused, and, radio, forget about it, it's going away.
No, not here.
And that's why I'm saying this next generation really has to, be welcomed in, and we have to keep them involved in the station.
What is it that you love about radio? I mean, abstractly, yes, we're the hub of the community and all of that, and everybody has their own show and you can just come on and talk or whatever. What is it that you love about radio?
Well, I guess I'd have to just say it's an opportunity for self-expression.
Yeah, It is.
You know, you have the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give you that opportunity. We're going to train you. We're going to give you a time slot. And go for it.
Yeah. And we have the record library if you don't. You know, we have about a minute left. And I'm wondering, you know, one thing that I think is really new for you, I guess, that maybe you didn't think of way back in the Wayback Machine in 1983, is the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program.
Mm, so
thoughts
important.
About that?
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, you know, Andy Zanka is very special to me personally. Mm-hmm. Andy and my son Cody, when they were 10 years old, when we went on the... this was about 1986. Mm-hmm. They had their own show where they broadcast the local menus for the school lunches. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing. 10-year-old kids.
Yeah.
They had their own show. And, you know, Andy was a troubled kid. And I eventually took Andy in my business and trained him to help me in the locksmith shop.
Oh, wow.
And so when I see Andy's name as the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program and how the program has brought in local kids in the mm-hmm. schools. I think that's one of the most important things we've done. It's
well,
great.
Lee Swidler, we're out of time. Wasn't as scary as you thought.
It
huh?
wasn't as scary.
He was very nervous beforehand, and I thought, wow, here's Lee, he's the founder, he's nervous. But it's been a real pleasure.
Well, thanks for having me, Amy.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you came to visit, and hopefully you will stay tuned.
And I hope everybody else does.
Yeah. This has been Valley Voices. My guest has been Lee Swidler, founder of KDNK, also known as Manny Goldberg.